9. Lorne. Yes, baskets of popcorn do sit around his office. Yes, he's something of a health nut who takes conscientiously good care of himself. But none of the little details about Lorne Michaels quite compares to one imposing fact. In 40 years of live shows, except for a 5-year hiatus, he has never missed a single telecast. Whatever was happening in the world at large, or in his own world, Michaels has always been there when Saturday Night Live went on the air, and 90 minutes later when it went off. It is indeed a pristine and perfect attendance record. But Michaels doesn't like to talk about it. He thinks it might be bad juju. That is, to discuss it would be to tempt fate. The show must go on, as the old adage says, but not without Lorne. Alan Zweibel, writer. I remember Gilda used to say that she would search through Lorne's desk, hoping that she'd find a note in there that said, "I really like Gilda."
Julia Sweeney, cast member. I came into the office one day at the end of my first year and said to Christine Zander, "Oh my God, I had a dream about having sex with Lorne last night." And she stopped everything, and her body froze, and she turned to me. Like suddenly it was so like in a cult. And she said, "Julia, we all have those dreams. And I just want you to know it doesn't have anything to do with sex. It has everything to do with power. Maybe that will help you."
Steve Burke, NBC Universal CEO. The first time I called Lorne, I said, "Lorne, I'm Steve Burke. You may have read that we just did this deal and I have this list of 25 people that I'm calling, Brian Williams, Jeff Zucker, and others, to have breakfast, lunch, or dinner with me sometime in the next month or so to introduce myself, and you're right at the top of my list." There was a long pause, and then Lorne said, "Well, breakfast will never happen."
Ann Beats, writer. I've probably had more conversations about Lorne than anybody in my life other than my parents. He was a mentor and a very powerful figure in all of our lives. I do think that he tended to criticize more than to praise, in terms of a management style. But since that also reflected my father, I guess I felt fairly comfortable with that. Maybe he picked people who were dysfunctional in such a way that they did feel comfortable with that.
Fred Wolfe, writer. I had a turbulent family life, and my dad wasn't around that much. And I just think Lorne is the greatest. I'd be furious at him, and I'd be, like, really happy sometimes, and other times I'd be sullen. But he's just the greatest guy that I've come in contact with, certainly in my career. Some people can get away with everything with him, and some people he just would never give a break to. And you can never really figure out why. Will Forte, cast member. At 30 Rock, there's the weird elevator system where you have to go down to the 16th floor and walk around the corner to take another elevator that will take you down to the bottom floor. We all got into the elevator, and Lorne was walking down the hall toward us. It was a very crowded elevator, and he just said, "It's all right, I'll get the next one." So the elevator doors shut, we go down one floor, the doors open, we walk around to the other elevators, and Lorne is there. It was impossible. It was just like he had a time machine. And we said, "Lorne, what are you doing here? How did you get here?" And he looked at us and said, "I'm magic."
Tina Fey, cast member. He's not terribly effusive. He does not give it out so easily, and that just makes you want to get praise and approval from him more. I think that people who most adamantly deny they would want that approval are probably the ones who want it the most. Marilyn Suzanne Miller, writer. I read a thing in the Times about Tina Fey, and she said something like, "Well, you really want to please Daddy," with regard to Lorne. But Jesus, we thought he was Daddy when I was 25 and he was 30. He was that strict father even when we were kids. You would always look to Lorne for approval. You wanted this father figure to say, "That was good." but I don't feel by not saying that stuff he was hurting people. He wasn't going, "I'm not speaking to you because your sketch didn't go well." He was that kind of strict father who'd only tell you you did good when you did incredibly good. I remember once he came up to me and said, "You did good." And that was like him giving me a giant house in the Hamptons and a garage full of cars. Lorraine Newman, cast member. Lorne was so close to our age, and because he was the person he was uncomfortable being the boss. I don't think he liked the barrier that put between him and having true friendships with the people he worked with. I think the worst you can say is that he mismanaged or underestimated the impact he had on people who depended on him, and when he couldn't make it good for them, how betrayed they felt. It's tough, but I think that's why a lot of people felt that the rug was pulled out from under them. I did, too. I just felt like he was my guardian, you know? He had brought me from Los Angeles to do this show, yet all these people were getting more airtime than I was. I thought, why wasn't he protecting me? Why wasn't he making sure that I had as much time as anybody else? And it's because I was one of many. It's not as if he said to me, "Tough shit," you know, or "That's the way it is," or "Love it or leave it." He really tried to work with me. He really tried. Christine Zander, writer. We worked with him before he had children, and I think we were probably all his children before he had children. Lorne somehow manages to be a paternal figure, and I think that's because he enjoys being a father. If he didn't make eye contact with me for a day, I thought, okay, for sure I'm fired. And there would be nothing to support that paranoia. Jane Curtin, cast member. I think he picked the right profession, because he gets to lord over people who want to kneel at his feet, and he doesn't acknowledge them, which makes them work harder. Anna Gasteyer. I think a lot of us are comfortable with, or afflicted by, or taken with, distant fathers. I'm sure there's a lot of alcoholism in a lot of families connected to the show. That's what I gather. People here are comfortable with chaos. People here are comfortable with distance, with what's not being said, and being able to read what's not being said. So I think that there's a comfort with Lorne's silence for a lot of us.
Adam Sandler, cast member. Lorne does have a great way of making you feel comfortable. He can also make you feel nervous if he chooses to. But when Lorne would tell a cast member that their skit was funny or you did a good job in a particular bit that you did on the show, it felt great, and it really helped your confidence. You felt secure, and you felt like, this guy's seen a lot of different styles of comedy, and he made you feel part of a cool group. John Lovitz, cast member. Lorne says I made him like my dad, which I didn't, but he was the boss, you know, and you want to please the boss. But he would say to me, "Come to me with any career problems or any problems you have." I was supposed to do a movie with him, and it didn't happen. He blames the studio, and he told a friend of mine that it was my fault, and I got really angry. So then I said stuff about him, and it all got back to him. So for 4 years, we really didn't get along. But the last few shows, we made up. I think a lot of us have mixed feelings for Lorne. We're so grateful that he hired us and gave us this opportunity that we'd do anything for him. Then you want his approval. You want approval from your boss and the audience. And he's just not the kind of guy who could do it all the time. I confronted him once because every Monday he'd be screaming at me. I said, "Lorne, my characters are hit characters. I'm here until 7 a.m. I write 3 sketches every week." Most of the other people weren't writing for themselves because they didn't know how. I said, "Do you like me? Do you have a problem with me?" Because I was determined not to be afraid of him. And then he goes, "Don't do that. It's too Jewish." I was like, "What? What's too Jewish?" And he says, "Saying you have a problem with me." Paul Simon, host. That's not true that he was a father figure. No, he wasn't. He was like one of the guys. He wasn't a father figure to me, not to Michael O'Donoghue, not to Gilda. But Lorne became the father figure as the cast and writers became younger in comparison to his age. And I think that was one of his big transitional points, when he realized that he wasn't one of their contemporaries, when he wasn't one of the boys and he wasn't looked upon as one of the gang. I think that's when he started to act separate from everybody. He used to wear jeans and a blazer. Then he became a suit and tie guy.
Candace Bergen, host. To me, one of the most, if not the most, interesting aspects is the relationship of Lorne to the cast, and all of the permutations that Lorne, as father figure or as authority figure, goes through. There's a kind of ambivalence that the cast had for someone who had really found them and put them in this and created their careers. It's just unbelievable the number of talents that have come out of that show, and the resentment of Lorne is consistent with being a father figure and an authority figure, the desperate need for attention and for Lorne's approval. These people went through all of this transference with Lorne as the father figure, with all the attendant complexities of it. The relationship of the cast to Lorne was just very complicated. Even to trying to keep people clean, trying to keep people sober, to keep people straight. I always felt Lorne was never given anywhere near the credit that he deserved for really having such an impact on our culture, and on comedy, and on television.
Daryl Hammond, cast member. He was the boss. He met with me when he needed to meet with me, and I think he understood me really well. I didn't know him as well as other people knew him, but I knew him to be a very strong boss. His advice was strong and final. Anyone can second-guess anyone else, but when we would go out there for the live show, his changes usually worked. He can't always be right, no one can, but he invented this. It's not a sketch show, and it's not a comedy show, and it's not a variety show or a musical show. It's Saturday Night Live. It's his, and he knows how to do it, and I don't.
Paula Pell, writer. You want to be under those bleachers getting him to laugh so hard that he puts his head down. And now, because I have known him for so many years, and he's seen me through failures and successes in my professional and personal life, I have a comfort with him now where sometimes if he's giving me shit under the bleachers, I'll say, I can't hear you because the laughter's too loud. When it dies down, you can give me that note. And we'll just laugh. I really can give him shit now. Sometimes I'll walk away going, I can't believe I was just sitting on Lorne's lap and telling him he needs a hug and just squeezing him.
Alan Zweibel. Lorne's modus operandi when it came to motivation was, we were a bunch of kids, and if we were denied daddy's, his, approval, we worked harder and harder to get it. Some thrived on that, some didn't. Harry Shearer, cast member. I found that if you try to approach Lorne on an adult basis, make an appointment, go into his office, wait the requisite 2 hours, and try to have an adult conversation, you would find a very interesting, polished, smooth discussion that basically led to no results and no change at all. But I found that, as I watched what went on in the show and sort of heard the stories of the previous years, it became more and more apparent that that was not the way to approach Lorne, that you really had to, if you were a cast member, act out. And if you set fire to waste baskets, you'd get Lorne's attention much more effectively than if you, you know, scheduled a meeting, waited, and talked like a grown-up with him. I believed, and I think the evidence pretty much shows, that Lorne's approach to the cast was to try to infantilize them. He wanted them to be like children. He'd be the daddy. That was his preferred way of relating to people. And I didn't particularly want to relate that way.
Nora Dunn, cast member. Sometimes I would just get really, really mad and throw a fit to get attention, and then they'd think, uh-oh, something has to be done. You can't help but make this sort of analogy that the show was our mother, and Lorne was our father, and you wanted to please both of them. You certainly didn't want Lorne to be angry with you. The worst thing you could hear from Lorne was that you had bad form. He really meant it when he said that, and you really felt badly if you were accused of having bad form. Rachel Dratch, cast member. I wasn't the type to be, like, chatting in his office and going to Yankees games with him like some people were. A few people who have the same sensibility as him for the whole biz thing get kind of close to him. But I was super shy around him. I would kind of skulk around the hallways, like, just happy to be here.
Bill Hader, cast member. The thing I realize about Lorne is that he's a giant fan of show business. He really cares about and is fascinated by show business and comedy. When you would just talk to him at an after party, he would loosen up. I had this amazing night where he was with Steve Martin and they were talking to me about comedy albums, and then it was like they weren't Lorne Michaels and Steve Martin anymore, these giants in comedy. They were just like me and my friends when we were 15 and watching SNL. They became these two comedy nerds quoting stuff back to each other. Richard Dreyfuss, host. We certainly were children. Actors can always be children. But Lorne was certainly an adult. Of course, nobody knew he would do it for 30 years, but he was exactly the same then as he is now. He's got good pace. He's got a great rhythm. He never gets too excited. He never gets too up. He never gets too low. I would personally believe that he's never been to a hockey game in his life. John Goodman, host. You know, these are sensitive people Lorne has to deal with. A lot of them are people who are going to get hurt, because every once in a while they're going to get their feelings stepped on. That doesn't happen maybe as often as it used to, but it's bound to happen from time to time. And any time you're dealing with people like that, there's going to be a little hand-holding involved. Obviously, Lorne knows this. David Spade, cast member. When I first read Hollywood Minute at read-through, Lorne laughed all the way through it. It was really like having your dad say he liked something, and that was exciting.
Julia Sweeney. I still have approval dreams about Lorne, which is very embarrassing. Like, I wake up and I say to myself, oh, God, how many fucking years does it take before you don't have Lorne showing up in your dreams telling you that you did a good job on something? I mean, like, that's pretty deep into the psyche.
Bernie Brillstein, manager. If I had to make one deal in my life with the devil or Satan, I'd send Lorne. Because after the conversation was over, they would give him what he wanted. He's the most articulate guy in the world. He doesn't always know if he's right or wrong, but he always makes it sound great. Chris Rock, cast member. How can anyone hate the guy? A lot of people have problems with Lorne. A lot of people I've met from the show come from these great backgrounds, and they're not used to working for people. And you know he hired you to work for him. There's no working with. You're only working with if you count the money at the end of the night. Otherwise, you're working for. And when you're working for somebody, you're going to have to do shit you don't want to do. And sometimes they're not going to talk to you. And that's what working for people is. Bob Tischler, writer. I don't have a whole lot of respect for Lorne's opinion. To me, it was better if Bill Murray said he liked a sketch. I just don't think Lorne is creatively terrific. I don't know him that well, but whenever I had a meeting with him, I've walked out of the room going, I don't even know what the fuck just went on. I don't hold him in the same regard that a lot of people do. I was just never very impressed with him. I thought he spent more time talking about theories of comedy, things that were very non-substantive in terms of what we had to do. Brian Doyle Murray, cast member. I was down in Florida working on the movie Caddyshack with Harold Ramis, and I came back a little late. As soon as I arrived, my brother Bill asked me, "Have you seen Lorne yet?" I said, "No, I haven't seen him." He says, "Don't you realize you're supposed to go kiss the Pope's ring?"
Lily Tomlin, host. I don't really want to say a lot about Lorne. I don't think he could accomplish what he has accomplished if he wasn't ambitious. Also, he's much more astute politically than someone like me. He would know who to have lunch with. It would never occur to me to have lunch with somebody or something like that. I never understood about functioning in the system.
Craig Kellum, Associate Producer. My theory about Lorne is that he's one of those guys whose mother told him every day of his life when he was a kid that he was the most wonderful person in the world and he could do no wrong. Because Lorne just believed in what he was doing, and nobody was going to get in his way. He was determined to get what he wanted, to accomplish what he wanted, and do it the way that he wanted it. If something worried him, he wasn't overt about it. He just figured out what he wanted to do, and somehow his willpower outlasted everybody else's resistance.
Janine Garofalo, cast member. My secret assumption about Lorne is that he may suffer from such a deep case of self-loathing that if you agree to be on his show and you are nice to him, he cannot respect you. So, therefore, you are left to wallow in your own despair. He was always very nice to me, but I just presumed that he had to have been aware that the environment was toxic. He had to know that there were so many unhappy people, yet as far as I know, he was never concerned. He rules on the theory of a house divided is a house that's more easily controlled.
Alec Baldwin, host. Lorne is a good friend of mine. I have a lot of respect for him, and I admire what he's done and continued to do, and not just because of the longevity. I still think the show, from time to time, is really funny. Lorne is the glue that holds it together, or doesn't hold it together, as the case may be, because he can be very laissez-faire about how he conducts the whole thing. He lets the whole show kind of sort itself out, the people's wants and desires and egos and everything. Because of my fondness for Lorne and my being around the show so much, I would sometimes look at the people and want to say to them, "There's a very good chance that it's never going to get any better for you than this." Chris Elliott, cast member. When people talk about Lorne, pompous and self-centered usually come up. A lot of people say he enjoys hearing himself talk, and I'm not necessarily saying that in a bad way, because to me that's who he is. It never bugged me. It was always kind of entertaining. I always enjoyed those Monday evening dinners with Lorne and the host. They were always fun. And if you got Lorne and Steve Martin together, the two of them would really go off. Tom Hanks, host. I think he's one of the most mesmerizing conversationalists you'll ever meet. He's a fabulous person to sit down and have a dinner conversation with, because it just never stops. Sometimes it's flashy, like, "Oh, you know, Mick came over last night, and Mick and I..." You know, Mick came by. I'm going to guess that's Mick Jagger, right? Oh, understood. But, you know, he's also got kids. He's also got the same vision of the business, I think, that we all have, that we respond to excellence. You know how a lot of times you'll meet royalty and they're kind of boring? He's not. He's this kind of royalty that ends up being convivial and intelligent and, in some ways, inclusive. Even though he has an inclination to tell the same story over and over again if you haven't seen him for a few years. But he's magnificent, well-read, hip company to keep. Bill Murray, cast member. I had a different relationship with Lorne than the others, I think. I was adopted. You can love an adopted kid, but there's still something different. Lorne's social life is different than mine. He travels in a more rarefied circle than mine. He travels the world. He sees it from a different point of view. Part of it's because he's an alien, you know. A Canadian. They have sort of like British echoes that they have to fulfill. They have to go to Wimbledon, and they have to do stuff like that that we Americans don't really feel anything about. When I hosted the show a couple years ago, I remember just turning to Lorne and saying, "God, you really learned how to do this." He was really good at it, much better than I knew or appreciated at the time. I think he's better now than he was in the old days. He used to seem sort of arbitrary sometimes, but he really did learn how to do it. I think given the firepower of that group in the first couple of years, there were a couple people besides him that could have done it. But he fought the great fights. He really was good at that. He fought the fights against the network. He fought the fights for the best crew. He got the network off our backs. He put us on a different floor. He kept us away from everybody. He gave us the independence that we needed so we didn't feel like we were under a microscope. And it worked. He made great choices. And now, just in terms of producing a TV show, he's really good at it.
Candace Bergen. Well, he's an extraordinarily good friend. He's a wonderful storyteller, and he loves to talk. You'd think he wouldn't have time to pay attention to you, but he pays real attention, and he's incredibly generous as a friend, and very loyal. He's so smart and perceptive about people. He just gets people so quickly, and he's so astute in what he picks up about them. He's amazingly measured and wonderfully witty. I love hearing Lauren's point of view on everything, basically because I just think what he has to say is so worth hearing. Lauren is only a force for good. I loved Lauren immediately, as soon as I met him, and he's just one of the people that really matters in my life, and in hundreds of people's lives. When my husband died, and there was a tribute for him, without even asking, Lauren had it filmed and had videotapes made. And it was the kind of thing he would do and never even refer to it.
Steve Martin, host. I think I understand him. I never found him inscrutable. I hear it sometimes said about myself. When you're dealing with all different kinds of people all day and everyone has a goal toward you, a lot of times you don't fulfill their goal, and then they think, oh, uncommunicative. When really it's just that there's no time to fill everyone's goal. Lorne hasn't changed that much. He's Lorne. He's always been a talker, always been kind of wise, always had an overview of how things work.
Gwyneth Paltrow, host. When I first met him, I was very intimidated by him. I'd never met such a waspy-seeming Jew in my life, and I was like, where's the inn, you know? I didn't get how to access him at all, and I found him very intimidating. And then I sort of feel like I broke through and didn't feel intimidated, and now it's easy to be around him. I am very fond of him. I think he's very smart and a very nice guy, and such a fan of comedy and talent. He's really an amazing person. The most interesting thing is to kind of be around people like Will Ferrell who talk about Lorne. He carries such weight for all these guys. And they sort of talk about him with love and fear. It's like he stays with them in an extraordinary way. They tell stories of him being very encouraging while also kind of not letting them get a big head about where they are, kind of being discouraging at times in his effort to maintain the hierarchy there. And they're always imitating him, constantly. Everyone imitates Lorne. Nassim Pedrad, cast member. So much of your time in the beginning is defined by your relationship with Lorne. Lorne's like this father figure meets your boss, meets Obi-Wan Kenobi, and all you want to do is not disappoint him. In the beginning, you don't interact with him constantly, so when you do, stakes are really high. And then if time goes on, you become more comfortable with him and you can start being yourself. Then the next thing you know, you're sitting with him in his office, checking out the fish in his aquarium and telling him about a pair of jeans you really want to buy.
Garrett Morris, cast member. There's this commercial with a guy sitting on top of a John Deere machine, and the guy says, "How long does a John Deere last?" You know, they're like a Maytag. Nobody ever goes to repair these motherfuckers, right? That commercial has always reminded me of Lorne. Nobody ever had to call the repairman on him. I was lucky to work for a man like Lorne, who was a great guy and a genius. Two or three times I figured I should have been fired. It wasn't that he was soft. He just dealt with his people a certain way. He knew I was totally dysfunctional. He accepted the responsibility of hiring me, whatever I was. But if you did something wrong, he would tell you about it. He would cut me to pieces. It wouldn't take him long to cut you down, either. About a minute and a half, and I was crawling back to the dressing room. Lorne dug me with all of my flaws. I dig him with all of his. I'm still a Lorne Michaels man. Tom Schiller, writer. I don't hold anything against Lorne at all. I think he's a shrewd businessman. He realized his dream. He has the power to galvanize people around him who can help him realize his dream. He can make you very excited about the possibilities of exploring your own creativity, and he can get you going. He's good at that. I was friends with him for a while, but I haven't spoken to him in years. I don't think anyone can get really totally close to him.
Kate McKinnon, cast member. I remember reading that Lorne was a trained concert pianist and loved Rachmaninoff, and I was keeping this bit of information in my back pocket to use in order to bond with him, because I also play the piano and love Rachmaninoff, and I severely wanted him to like me. So I bided my time, and then I found my moment. It was the first time I was going to be saying, "Live from New York, it's Saturday night!" I was playing Martha Raddatz in a vice presidential debate cold open, and he came up to me right before air and said, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Yes," then timidly, "So I hear you love to play Rachmaninoff." And he said, "No, no, Paul Simon wrote that about me once as a joke." Then he patted me on my back, walked away, and the show started. It's hard to start a conversation with a man who knows and has seen everything. Carrie Fisher, host. Lorne was on my honeymoon, so by all rights I should know Lorne very, very well. He was always like Big Daddy, giving his little comedy treatises and lectures and explaining things to you about comedy. I was really young, and I thought I had quite a bit to catch up on. I actually don't know that I did, but that was the feeling I had, because most people were older than I was. Lorne talks a lot. He's an expert. He liked to warm up to his topic. It used to be me and Paul and Lorne and his wife Susan in St. Bart's. He was a little bit dignified, which was funny in combination with Paul's a lot of bit dignified, but they are very close friends. They've been the closest of friends for, my God, 30 years. I liked Lorne because Lorne was much more social than Paul might be. He wanted to stay up and talk, and he was extremely social, and he would have people over, and I had grown up that way. It was the way I liked to live. Paul liked to dip into it, but also liked to leave and go back and work. He had a more solitary profession.
Conan O'Brien, writer. Robert Smigel and I were working on this silly pilot for Lorne called Look Well, and one night he said, "Let's have dinner and talk it over." So we go to the restaurant, and Lorne's there, and he's eating a breadstick. And we sit down, and he says, "Some friends are going to join us." And I said, "Fine." And we're sitting there for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden I hear over my shoulder, "What's going on?" And I turn around, and it's Paul McCartney and his wife Linda, and they come over and sit down. Now, if you asked me who I would most want to meet in the world, it's like, well, John Lennon's dead, so I guess Paul McCartney, you know? And now he's sitting right there. So I'm trying to recover while they sit down, and Lorne is gesturing with this breadstick, and he goes like, "We've been talking about a TV pilot. Conan, tell them what it's about." And my mind is just frozen. I've just suddenly been handed this ball, and I'm completely frozen. Lorne's eating a breadstick, and I'm thinking, why do I have to talk? That was a huge night for me. I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I had never met a Beatle. But for Lorne, it was just another night, just another dinner. Elliot Wald, writer. Lorne's had an enormous amount of success, and he lives very well. Someone once said if he had his way, the show would be Live from St. Bart's. Tom Davis, writer. Lorne a snob? Sure he's a snob. He's a starfucker of the highest order. And all of his close friends know it, too. But you just have to get past it. He has a very sweet side. He also, in my opinion, does reward the squeaky wheels, which I sort of resented personally because I always stuck up for him when he wasn't around. I'm very loyal. Meanwhile, the people who created problems, criticized him in the press, and stuff like that seemed to be rewarded for it, whereas someone like me, who was more protective of him, didn't seem to get the reward. That's the way I interpreted my own personal experience. I always wanted to be Lorne's friend, in the way that Dan Aykroyd is my pal and Bill Murray is my friend. It just never quite worked out. I think part of it might have been smoking dope in the office. He did then. He doesn't now that he has kids. I was closest to Lorne in the fourth and fifth year. It was the peak of my influence in the show, and I have great affection for Lorne. I sometimes wish that we were closer, but you know, it's business. He's one of my business associates. And some people become close pals, and with other people it's just a business thing. Robin Williams, host. Lorne has that Hotel Algonquin thing going on, filled with all the people he knows and has made and has been around. Kind of like the grand guru of comedy. Look at what has occurred under my reign, Emperor Lorne. Careful now, I'll be fucked for life. Be not afraid of him, he knows not where you live now. You're free, boy. He made kids in the hall, what else can you say? Came from Canada, a frostback, not knowing why. A boy with a vision in comedy, and then ending up at Brillstein Gray, and the rest is history. He likes to schmooze. You come into a meeting with Lorne, and he'll tell you how many times he's seen Jack Nicholson that week. It was like, I was just out with Jack. Oh, you mean Onassis? No, that's Jack E., boy.
Penny Marshall, guest. My mother always said she wanted her ashes spread over Broadway, because she was a tap dancing teacher in the basement of her building in the Bronx. I remember she wanted us to make sure her eyelashes were on. My brother thought there should be a party with tap dancing, which they did do, but I didn't go to. So I was in New York. My mother was donated to science, so you have to understand she just disappeared for a year after she died. They took her. Then all of a sudden her ashes arrived, and so my brother sends me a Ziploc baggie and a candy tin to New York, part of my mother, because she wanted to be spread over Broadway. So I called Lorne, because he had an office in the Brill Building, and I said, Lorne, can I use your office? I gotta throw my mother over Broadway. He says, excuse me? So I explain it all to him, and he said, sure, no problem. Lorne's favorite expression is no problem. So I went there with my daughter and a plastic spoon and a Ziploc bag, and we were singing this song from dancing school that my mother ended every show with when she put on shows, and out the window she went. Joe Mantegna, who was in Glengarry Glen Ross then, said, you should have told me, I would have put her on stage, I could have carried her ashes on stage in my pockets. I said she wouldn't have liked the play. He said, it's a Pulitzer Prize play. I said she wouldn't have liked it. There was cursing. Lorne's office is fine. Cut to Paris a year later, and my father, who had a stroke in 91, I think, whenever awakening was happening, wouldn't go get therapy or anything. They live for a long time, my family. They don't do well, but they're there. Their hearts won't stop. So I'm in Paris, and my brother called to say my father wasn't looking well. And I asked him, what should I do? Should I call Lorne? He calls him Lauren. Is Lauren around? Will Lauren be in New York? And ultimately, he didn't die that trip, but a couple of years ago, I had to call Lorne because we get cremated in my family. I went to New York with my father in a baggie, and I said, Lorne, I need your office again. He said, no problem. So I brought my father to the window in a baggie with a spoon, and out the window he went. And I'm trying to brush it off so it doesn't blow back on Lorne's desk, because Lorne never even met my father. And then my grandmother, who was cremated way before, in the 70s, was in a wall that looked like Hollywood Squares out in the valley, and for some reason my brother recently said, why is Nanny there all by herself? So I don't know if I've got to bring her to New York and call Lorne, I'm not sure yet. But my family goes out Lorne's window. I love Lorne, and I'd do anything for him and at any given time. Not only his talent, but his friendship has meant the world to me. Sometimes we're parted for a long time, but you know there's someone there who still understands what you're talking about. Besides, you never know, I may need his window.
Robert Klein, host. or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch. I know Rudyard Kipling was a racist, but that's still a wonderful poem. Lorne just doesn't have that touch. His arrogance can make me smile. He's just very taken with himself and what he's accomplished. He's certainly done a wonderful job, though I wish he could have done more for Belushi. Brian Doyle Murray. Lorne's very hard to get close to. He was kind of isolated, you know? I remember being shocked when we had the Monday night meeting where you meet the host and pitch ideas. That meeting would always start with Lorne being delivered food at his desk, usually sushi. And I always thought that was really weird, that he would eat while everyone else was crouching and kneeling before him without any food for themselves. I thought it was a little rude, and I thought it was some kind of a power trip. Grant A. Tinker, former NBC chairman. I've been in the grill in Beverly Hills a couple of times, and Lorne will come in and he will just walk right by me. Which is not the end of my world, but it has always made me wonder, why does he do that? I have no idea what it comes from. What could it have been? If he says I showed no interest in Saturday Night Live, well, that's true. I mean, not the show as it appeared on television. It was just never appointment viewing for me. And I had no interest in trying to fix a problem that was way down the list of problems that NBC had. Albert Brooks, filmmaker. If you interviewed somebody from a movie I made and they said it was the worst set they'd ever worked on, I'd have to take that hit. Here we are 30 years later and I can remember it all. Lorne was in charge, and he didn't behave very well toward me.
Janine Garofalo. I waited in his office for hours, and then I decided I would refuse to be embarrassed like that again. You'll wait for a lot of hours. That's a power thing. Then, when he realizes you'll do it, he can't respect you. How could he? You've shown him your weakness. You've shown him that you will wait 4 or 5 hours and that you'll take it. There's your first mistake.
Paul Simon. For a lot of these people who come out and say nasty things, I think, hey, he's not perfect. For the most part, I don't think Lorne ever screwed over anybody. Maybe they didn't like something about Lorne's personality, or maybe they didn't like his judgment or something like that. But he never hurt anybody's career. People from Saturday Night Live went on to huge careers, and Lorne didn't have any piece of them. He didn't own them or take them or control them. He's a decent guy. And he's a very powerful guy, and it's unusual to find somebody who's really, really powerful who is that decent. He doesn't push people and throw his weight around, and he never did. He was nasty when he was young, but he mellowed. I think that's why he's a hell of a boss to work for, really. You're lucky if Lorne is in your life. For the most part, for most people, their life is improved. I know that's the case with me. Damon Wayans, cast member. I have gained an enormous respect for Lorne Michaels and his ability to see beyond his ego. He never said anything but great things about me, even though he fired me. I remember there was a kid on the show who had a drug problem, and Lorne would put him in rehab and take care of him and pay him while he was there and then bring him back to the show. He was like a father to the kid, with the kind of patience that a father would have. Andy Breckman, writer. If there's one thing you can't fault Lorne for, it's the format of the show and how the show comes together. Because more than any other show in the history of television, it's withstood the test of time. I mean, that format is fucking indestructible, isn't it? If that's all Lorne came up with in his life, I think he'd have earned a place in the Television Hall of Fame. John Stewart, host. Lorne doesn't have much of a track record, so that's why it was really hard to trust him that everything was going to be okay. But I thought, well, I'll give this kid a shot and see what he can do for me. I think the thing that probably strikes me most is, here's a guy who clearly doesn't have to work this hard but still does, and you can only attribute that to either he's insane, or he's still excited about the show, he still enjoys it, he still has passion for it, and he still wants it to be good.
Lily Tartikoff. Lorne is Saturday Night Live, I mean, Dick is, too. Dick did a fantastic job, and I don't really know how to define who did what. No one's ever going to know, actually. But, you know, there are things that Dick can do. I mean, you would not have Lorne Michaels run NBC Sports. But you would only have Lorne run Saturday Night Live and make these movies with those guys. That defines who he is. And that's why he probably has done it for so long, because he probably can't stop.
Dana Carvey, cast member. Lorne had your career and your fate in his hands. He definitely was the centerpiece because he owned the baseball field. Ultimately, he decided how much you got on air, how much access you had to your audience. He was like the principal of the school. There was a lot of weighty energy around Lorne, and basically I was just terrified of him the first 3 or 4 years, afraid of his power. He could cut you to the quick if he wanted to. He had an acerbic wit. He also could make you feel like $1 million. He's of the school of very minimal compliment, so that they're weighty when you get them. And they wouldn't be handed out when Church Lady killed. It would be like if I played a cowboy in a scene and I had some funny exit. I thought your exit as Cowboy Bill was breathtaking. It would be the most obscure detail, and you'd feel like $1 million. He's just a great character. There's a great rhythm about him. He's so fun to listen to. He'll go on and on. He'll come up with the weirdest way of looking at things. But we were like his children in a way. He would look down and say, "Kevin's going to do that third year thing where he asks, 'Who am I in the cast?' Danny went through the same thing. You're going through like that Chevy first year, shall I stay kind of thing." It was great. Bob Odenkirk, writer. Chris Farley came up to me once, and he was almost crying. He was in his second month at the show, and he said, "I don't get what's going on. Every time I do a bad job, Lorne comes up to me and tells me I just did great. And every time I kill, he comes up to me and says, 'You could work a little harder. You could have done that better.'" Chris's head was spinning. But if you want to know the greatest thing I ever saw Lorne do, it was the way he wound up treating Chris. I think Lorne was determined not to have what happened to Belushi happen to Chris on his watch. And it seemed to me that Lorne very seriously put it to Chris. Every time Chris messed up, he had to go get cleaned up before he could come back on the show. And Lorne seemed to do that even to the detriment of the show, which is to say, he would take Chris off the show even on the Thursday before a show. Lorne really made Chris think about what he was doing, because the most important thing to Chris in the world was performing on that show. That was the goal of his life. And Lorne knew it. And Lorne took it away from him multiple times and forced him to go on rehab. I don't think he ever let Chris slide. And I think that was a great, great thing. An amazing thing. And something I haven't seen anyone else do.
Marcy Klein, co-producer. Sometimes right before they say live, like right before the show starts, when the music is playing but before the host comes out, it's so pathetic. I start getting misty-eyed and all emotional, because I just can't believe I'm doing this job. I can't believe how much I like this show. And Lorne gets the same way. That's the moment when I see him get the most excited. I'll look over at him, and his eyes will be popped open, and he'll get on his toes to look out, and he'll be mouthing the intros, and he's just so excited. Molly Shannon, cast member. I did a Mary Catherine Gallagher sketch with Mike Myers and Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, and there was like a brick wall, really balsa wood painted to look like brick, and the stunt people cut the wood so you could break through it fairly easily. But they didn't have enough time to stack the balsa wood fake bricks, and the sketch was starting, and I went like, "Oh no, that's the wall I'm supposed to break through, and it's not ready. What am I going to do?" And then it was like, 9, 8, 7, 6, oh God, oh shit, the whole sketch. And then Lorne just appeared behind the other side and looked at me like, "Don't let this goof you up. Just do it. Go ahead." And I was just like, wow. It helped me a lot that he was there. Stuff like that sort of fuels your performance, and that little private moment between Lorne and me. That's just something that he did do that helped me. Carol Leifer, writer. I always felt like if Lorne was stony toward you, it was pretty impenetrable. I saw him not too long ago and went over to say hello, and it was like the quintessential Lorne moment. Oh, hello, Carol, how are you? What's going on? Talking, bullshitting. Then a band started playing with blaring horns. It was real loud music. And Lorne just turned to me and said, "Conversation over." And now that's become a catchphrase among my friends and me. Conversation over. That's quintessential Lorne.
Dick Ebersol, NBC executive. Maybe it's because of his marriage to Alice or having a family, but the Lorne of today has done, I think, a very, very good job of learning at this stage of his life to delegate. He has, for the first time in the history of the show, the semblance of a real life. And that was never true for Lorne, or me, over the first 2 decades of the show. I can see it now, though. He doesn't have to live at the show all the time anymore. Al Franken, writer. Lorne called the shots, but Lorne is also taking into account a lot of things. He used to try to make sure that everyone was in the show. That was easier to do when the cast was smaller. Sometimes he would put something in just because someone needed something in, psychologically. Sometimes 2 pieces may bump in a certain kind of way that other people don't see, the same style of a piece, and they shouldn't run back to back. There are just so many factors. You can't get from this set to the other set. There is no configuration in the show where this thing can go in. This sketch can go in, but then we have to lose that sketch. Almost every week that was the case. Somebody felt bad, and some people take it like, "I am insulted," or "I am just going to take it." Those were people who usually got a lot of stuff, and other people were angry and hurt and depressed, actually. A person could actually get so disheartened and depressed that it affected their ability to create. Certain people actually spiraled out of control, or spiraled down to a point where they were having a difficult time emotionally during the year, and it very much hurt their productivity. And it was just a vicious cycle. Gary Shandling, host. Lorne's presence was mostly felt on tape day, what I call tape day, which is the day it's done live. On Saturday, he would come and do the dress rehearsal, the first show in front of an audience, and that's when I went up into his office and just watched him very intuitively reorder the sketches on a big board and cut very intuitively without any doubts. He was really one with that show and the process of selection of what finally aired. He was like a surgeon, very quick, very smart. I certainly don't remember anyone arguing with him.
Ann Beats. I always felt a little concerned that Lorne never so much as made a pass at me. I thought he was really cute. I remember thinking that he was really cute and interesting. Rosie Schuster, writer. The first summer we were separated, I was 14, and that was the last separation we had for many, many, many years. He announced that when I came back from Los Angeles, he wanted to pet. So I spent the entire summer straining, pulling, doing my best to grow a set of tits.